Okay, so just framework for what Shear is generally going to be like. I see I have already failed to be clear enough as to what I hope people will accomplish today. So if we go past where you're prepared, we'll carry you through and read things together. And if we don't get as far as you're prepared, then you'll do independent research tomorrow and come in and present stuff. I forgot to let you last class tell us what Howard Nachman explains the relationship between Eisher Eotime and Yerid Lemot Chavero. So we'll start with the words.
It's on 1 foot. It's a very long term, but I would say it has to do with the fact that production and reproduction are two sides of the same coin for him, and therefore the idea of taking away someone's money and limiting their ability to have a livelihood is similar to taking away their wife and limiting their ability to have children.
Good heavens, that's very capitalist.
He went farther than that. He said you're actually Mahar Achareho.
Yeah, he says if you steal money from somebody, you end up lusting after their wife.
And their wife lusts after you.
And it gets very complicated.
Good heavens. All right. Okay. We've had our moment of that. Wow.
Because nothing's more interesting than...
I actually think the production-reproduction thing is not...
Okay. Okay, so the structure of how Shear functions in the ideal world is that we'll start by having somebody do a 2 to 5 minute summary of what you think we did last year, so they have some security, hopefully, that there's some recollection and some understanding of where we are. We should try and set up a rotation, so you'll know in advance that you're the person who does that, as opposed to being called on the spot. In the context of Shear, so... So I try not to call on people when they're not prepared, but I also do think everyone should be prepared to talk, so if you're not part of the conversation, at some point I may try to call on you. If there's a day you really, really don't want to be called on, so it might be nice if you told me that in advance. If you're speaking and share anyway, then I have no reason to call on you otherwise. And hopefully the idea is everybody should walk in and be ready to read the text we're doing. That's the ambition, is that everyone should be ready to read whatever we have done in Shear. Okay, but I didn't tell anyone to prepare for this class, so unless someone wants to volunteer and do a 2 to 5 minute summary of what we did last year. Someone want to volunteer? The record will stand that no one desperately wants to volunteer. Okay, so what I think we did is we established the term Yerid Lemot Chavero. We set up all sorts of context and frameworks in which the term Yerid Lemot Chavero could be analyzed in terms of significance and halachic status. And then we did the Gemara in Ketubot that set up a series of cases. One of those cases, which was brought in tangentially, is the case of Ani Mehapech Becharara. And that case has a consequence called Nikra Rasha. And that case seemed to be taken as a paradigm for a set of cases in which there are impacts where we view someone as having acted improperly, and there are legal consequences other than not allowing the... Not allowing the legal act to take effect. Okay, so now I want to point out just at the very outset that the term Nikra Rasha is an interesting, right? We say that the consequence is Nikra Rasha, that may not be the same thing as saying Rasha who. Right? If you say that someone is a Rasha, that's a judgment about them. If you say that someone is Nikra Rasha, that may be making a statement, that may be making a statement about consequences. So I want to point that out there. The term Nikra Rasha may be a term of art that specifically relates to specific categories of law. Okay, so today let's start with the Tosefta. Right, so Tosefta Nivamos gives us an opening case of a bor hakarov le'ama. Right, so the bor hakarov le'ama mitmalei rishon im kadam hasheni umilei hareze zariz v'niskar. Okay, so I want to explain to you what that is. Elliot.
So we talk of it like what's going on with rivers in the Western United States, that you have this irrigation channel that's going to a board, and you come in earlier in that irrigation channel and divot off or flow some of it to your board, and that's fine.
Okay, so there's some kind of public water.
Yeah.
Right? And the public water is, right, public water runs through a whole thing of people's fields. And so the ordinary says is the Bor HaKarov Mitmalei Rishon, meaning that, so right, when you have, so tell me, right, we have an irrigation channel, so why aren't all holes fill simultaneously?
Whoever is closer, the water's going to get there first, no?
Well, how does the water getting into it? Right. Pardon?
It flows.
It flows, right? Right. So you have a stream,
yeah.
and you have a gate, all right. So the irrigation channels aren't right. It's not a constantly flowing channel. It's that you can open the gate from the naturally flowing body of water into the irrigation canal, and part of it is you don't know if there will be enough or not. And that's part. Right, that's right. That's part of the question you have to figure out here. Is it when you say "Mitmalei Rishon"? Is it only a question of priority? Or is it that you don't know in advance how much there's going to be? You're diverting water from a natural natural stream into irrigation channel. So the default setting is that
an amla is a natural stream or a man-made stream?
An amla is a man-made stream, I believe.
Right.
Right. But the amla itself runs off a natural stream.
Right.
Okay. Now then, from the amla. You have, right, from the Amah, then you have to, right, then you open into, right, into your own field. And I imagine that each of these places can be open or closed. Right, you dig a channel from the Amah to your, right, to your field. And that can be open or closed. And the question, right, normally what will happen is the Amah opens and then you let the water flow into the first person's pit, and then he closes it, doesn't let it overflow. And you let and then the next person fills and so forth. What happens if you dig a channel earlier than that guy's bore, right? Which gets the water into your pit earlier. So the answer is right. So even though the default setting is the closest bore wins, we don't mind a race to the front. Now it seems to me this has an absurd consequence at the end, right? Where everyone's just fighting over digging the channels from the opening things. I'm not sure I have the reality right.
Cool. I would assume you're not moving your land to closer to the source of it. But if, for example, I bought a piece of land that didn't use the irrigation channel but actually closer to the source, I can now open it up that even though it wasn't used to be, and the person who's first now second.
Well, that's true. If I buy the closer field, I can dig it. But here we're saying that we all agree his A's field is closer, but somehow B is going to contrive to get his field watered first, even though A is physically closer.
I mean, I would think the case is when you're first making the amla, right?
Yeah.
It's not perfect with the lashon, but meaning when I'm first making the amla, so the person whose bor is closest to where the stream travels gets first priority. But if the guy comes through and digs a tunnel. And digs a channel off the amma to his bor, so that's fine.
So it's a permanent condition.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yaakov, what do you want to say?
Maybe something similar, but if the person who's there first, there would be an order of who gets to open up their pit or whatever, close off their pit, and the person who's there first, initially he gets the first dibs on it, but if he was late or something happened and it was time to open up the amma, and then the second person was there and the first person didn't claim his right take his claim, then the second person gets.
So it's we're Yaakov and Rachel and Leah at the well, and we say you don't have to wait for all the other Roim to get together, right? You just take off the cover and drink the water because you're here first. Okay. So here's the reason of Iniskar. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, one of the Mefreshim at the bottom of the Tisefta in the back of the Gemara says that you can't actually dig a stream. It just means that you can come with a bucket and take from the stream.
Come with a bucket. Okay.
I mean, no, that's because the second case is where you actually dig something, so the first case isn't going to be the same.
Aha. So the second case is Evir Amat Hamayim Al Gabei Boro Shel Chavero. So how do you understand that then?
Well, to be honest, I didn't understand it at all.
Okay, that's a fair answer. That's a fair answer.
But this, the first Shmuel or something.
Yeah.
Said that it was not where you're trying to steal water from the other person. It's when you're trying to prevent floods from flooding your field by diverting the flood to his field.
You
divert
the water to him, not away from him.
Al-Gabe doesn't mean to either, right? It means over.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find some stuff on this, but like, I think basically it's an aqueduct.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
It could be something where you literally could build it over and, you know, go over somebody else's bore and then they lose out.
If it's just flowing in, then automatically it will get redirected. You don't even need to have a huge construction.
Uh-huh. Do you think this is at the stage of initial construction again? Is that as opposed to,
you know, like
I somehow
got into the, you know, the engineer's office and I made sure to divert it away from my friend.
I was on the city council. okay. Yes. Yes.
Do they go into the water channel and just close up all the gates except yours?
Yes. I don't know. I don't know, and I'm not sure anyone really, you know, knows where.
Meaning, there's a concept of mine shall rob him. I can't. That's theft. Meaning, there's something that belongs to the public at large.
If I take more than my share.
Right. This is not talking necessarily about. Meaning, he the guy has a right to the water, so I can't deprive him of that right.
No, I can't. But let's imagine. Let's take a really classic tragedy of the common state. Right? There's a town commonly passed.
Can you introduce more formally the most significant political argument of the 20th century?
The tragedy of the commons. Here, now. let's suppose you have a public field, right? As opposed to just saying everybody can graze their cattle to the extent they want, we pass a resolution saying that everybody can graze their cows for an hour a day. But if you get there first, your cows will have more grass in their hour than somebody else's hour. Right? Now, we might have a rule saying that the person whose cows live closest, right, they get the pasture first. But if you get there and he's not there, so we don't stop you from, right, that would be it. Right? It still shall rob him. It's not theft. You're not taking more than your legitimate share. You're just taking your share earlier in the day when it's better. Yes, Jeff.
So, Bor Shukarov Ama Mit Malev Rishon Mit Ne Darche Shalom is a mission in Gittin.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So there's no proper. There's no natural right. Right. So we point out, right, that it's not like the position in the real estate gives you an ownership right in the public order. It's just we need some kind of order.
Okay.
Right. His mission to Darkei Shalom is we need some kind of order, because if we don't have any kind of default order, then people will just fight. So now the question is, how strong is that default? Yes, Tova.
Also, I mean, the main distinction I make in economics about common goods is whether they're, like, excludable, or sorry, whether they're libel risks or not, and whether they're excludable or not. So it's not clear to me. Like, so the Yamaha here seems to be, is that a limited resource? Is that an unlimited resource?
Well, that's what I point at. That's the issue is, will there be enough water no matter what, and the only question is order? Or is it possible that the water will run out?
Yeah.
Right, and if you feel last, you don't get there, right? That makes an enormous difference in the case.
But there's no indication in the text that makes a difference if there's a limited resource or not. I mean, presumably it's a limited resource, because all rivers, like, I'm sure that the stuff that assumes that it will run out eventually.
I don't know, we have irrigation channels off the Mississippi.
The Euphrates are still there.
But, it wouldn't make a difference then. So who cares? Like, if it never runs out, so who cares if who takes first or second? Like, everyone will get it eventually.
It might be that you just get your work done, you don't, you have less time wasted sitting around waiting for people. I don't know. That's right. I don't know what the gain and loss is here. Yes, different.
Does it also make a difference whether it's a river or rainwater or not?
Sure, that will affect whether it's a limited resource to some extent.
Unpredictable.
So that the reason this matters to us is we have accounted, we have Zoriz Viniskar. So Zoriz Viniskar, are two terms. You could treat them as some kind of comment, but it sounds like we're trying to make a point, which, if I were to say that the shorthand version of it is, you did a good thing and you win.
Either. Pardon?
Zaviz is like a good thing, or is it like an enterprising thing? Like,
well, if they hear something enterprising is not a good thing.
What?
You have a displayed entrepreneurial spirit.
More that it's like a good in a moral sense or good in a business sense?
Well, so that is an issue, but you're assuming that those are distinguishable categories.
Yes.
Right, so I don't know, right? One of the reasons I wanted to frame it this way is because of the possibility that we have here. You know, we have here a notion that entrepreneurial spirit is a moral category. And we praise you because you are economically Zariz. That is being a good, right? That is part of what being a good person is. Or if you read more Chazon Ish, we say, excellent Hishtadlus.
I mean,
Zariz
can also just mean fast.
Yes, it could. That would be much less interesting.
It's a midah that could be used in a Vodat Hashem.
And in this case.
Zarizut is part of a.
Avraham Avinu was a Zariz.
The meat of Zarizus. Zariz in my team.
Yes,
sir.
It's
a phrase like similar to like Misha Chadam Zofar. It's a phrase like that. No?
Yeah, but Kalakodam Zafa is if you do X, then you are Y. But here they're both consequences. Zariz is Zariz in Iskar. So you could say Zariz is a mutually descriptive term and Iskar is an outcome. But rhetorically, it's at least interesting to me. Yes, sir. Okay, so that's a good argument, right? That in that, right, that, in that framework, Zariz is a mida that can be used either for good or bad, right? So what you really want to say is, opposed to Zariz is Zariz, the Niskar, right? What you want to say is, this is an example of a Zariz who is Niskar.
In that Gemara.
And here too, that's why you want to read it that way, right? Saying, Zariz is Zariz Niskar, right? It's not that the Chiddush is not that he's Zariz. Right, it's just that you should know that right, the fact that he's a Zariz would not necessarily make it positive. So this is an example of the Zariz who is Niskar.
I would think that.
Yeah.
Given that I've seen the Yerushalmi, so...
Ah, so I don't want to go there yet. Good. Right? I don't want to go there yet. Hold that, and we'll get to Yerushalmi. Okay. Then after these cases, right, then we have the case of the Baal Kov and the Yerush. Where you have two different kinds of lien on the estate, and whoever grabs the estate first is Zariz v'Niskar, and then we get Haomer l'chaver say v'kadesh l'ishah pone talach v'kidsha l'atzma say v'kach l'mekach pone alach l'kach l'atzmo ma she'asa asui ela shenhagbo minhagar amayut. Now, right, we're wondering why. You know, it would be more fun in Chaim's point if we were to say Zariz is Zariz v'Nifsad. Right, that would be the case. But probably we can't say Zariz v'Nifsad in quite the same way because you don't lose. Right, so you're Zariz. Right, so now you're Zariz and you're Niskar, but we want to that outcome is still true. But you're Zariz v'Niskar elish and hagbom and hagram ayut. Right, that's what it sounds like. That's what it sounds like we're saying. Yeah.
There's also, I'm just looking in Lieberman here, and he brings up there's also Shafel in this guy.
Uh-huh, okay.
But it sounds like you're lazy. It seems like they're too independent.
Okay.
No, it's like what he said, meaning Shafel means slow, Zariz means fast. Meaning here you gain by getting fast, there are cases where you'll lose out by being fast, there are cases where you'll gain by being slow.
Right, so the only question, the only reason that, you know, that I don't take it as obvious that it's just neutral, is let's say I have a Gemara which says that the Talmud Torah can either be the Sam HaChayim or the Sam HaMovit. Right, so I can imagine a Mishnah which says, Yesh lo meid Torah v'niskar, Yesh lo meid Torah v'nifsad. Does that mean the Talmud Torah is neutral? No, it just means it's pervertible.
But that's the Talmud Torah is the action. Zariz isn't the action, it's describing the action. So the action you do can either be good or bad, but Zariz v'niskar, or Zariz v'nifsad is just talking about the outcome of the action.
I don't think Zariz is an outcome. Zariz is not an outcome of the action. Zariz is a
description of the action.
Yeah, you did the action. If it's not the action
description
itself.
Of the person.
Wait, very quickly. There's some specific sources that you put on the source sheet that agree with you.
Uh-huh. Good. Let's
that
all
doesn't mean
out.
They're in the... That
I don't want for the, I don't want more sources yet.
Okay.
I want to read
but
this.
But, like, it doesn't mean that's what the source means.
I want to read this text. Okay.
Well,
we have coming out of the Tisesta, for starters, is that there, we can say is that these cases are put in opposition to each other, assuming that the organization of the Tisesta has any significance whatsoever. These cases are contrasted with each other. There are cases in which you get something that in the default setting would have gone to somebody else, and we minimally say fine and maximally give you a thumbs up. And there are cases where you get something that one could conceive of as saying should have gone to somebody else, and we give you a thumbs down. And now we have to figure out what the difference is between those cases, right? But we can try to have an axis of distinction. The simplest one is, right, in one case you have, right, in one case you're under instructions from the party you're taking it from, in the other case you're not. But there may be other grounds for distinction. Okay, now we get to your shaman. The Shami says, "Tani harezet zariz v'niskar v'nikne hameka ela shenahag min hagramayut." So here, the Shami's version of Tosefta is really, as opposed to the way we saw in the Bavli, where you might see the Tosefta as an alternate version of the Mishnah, and right where the Mishnah says Masha Asa Asui, and the Tosefta says ela shenahag. Right, Mishnah says Mikudash L'Sheni, and the Tosefta says Masha Asa Asui ela shenahag min hagramayut. So the Shami's version of the Braita, right, puts the two together. The problem, obviously, is there's a reason iskar is a positive evaluation.
Yeah, now they're mixed together.
Right, now they're mixed together. So the language makes an enormous... Right, so the language makes a difference. Yes, Tova?
Wait, I'm sorry. Did we conclude that Zariz is a moral positive?
I wanted to argue that Zariz is a moral positive, right? So Chaim and Yish wanted to argue against me by saying that you have this case, Zariz and iskar, Zariz and isad, that tells you Zariz is neutral. I said, but we also have statements where Talmud Torah is good and bad, and it doesn't mean Talmud Torah is neutral, it just means that even things that are intrinsically good can be perverted.
Right, but...
So we don't know in the end.
But we can't claim that Zariz and Iskar is the equivalent to Asa Asoi,
it's... So I'm arguing that it sounds... Zariz and Iskar both sound like terms that have evaluative and not just... evaluative connotations.
With a moral valence.
And then I wanted to argue further that
okay.
I wanted to argue that. Now, the challenge to that is you'll open the Yerushalmi, and Yerushalmi thinks there's no contradiction.
Yeah, but in the Tosefta, we think that the final two examples are separate from the first three examples, that Masha Asa Asui is only the last two, not the first three.
Masha Asa Asui, the first three are Masha Asa Asui and thumbs up. The last three are Masha Asa Asui, but not thumbs up. But the last three in the Tosefta never use the terms Zariz v'Niskar.
Last two.
Last two. Right.
Okay, fine. So we know that the last two are not the reason it's car, and we conclude that all five are Asa Asoi, or only the last
two? We assume that all five are Asa Asoi.
Okay, fine.
And the last two, we thought in the Tosef, they were not Zariz v'Niskar, and the Yerushalmi comes and introduces
okay.
a version where they are.
Okay.
Yes?
Your point is helped by the fact that linguistically, the Tosef only uses the phrase Zariz in the cases where we approve. Or we don't disapprove.
Yes, right. So I think once you see the Yerushalmi, you understand, right? You understand, right? You see that, my, you know, that I'm trying to make this point.
Yeah.
And the Yerushalmi, the gears that we have, completely rejects it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless the Yerushalmi likes playing with paradoxes and say an action can have both a positive and negative moral valence simultaneously.
I don't think that's so clear. The Yerushalmi in the first line doesn't use the phrase Masha Asa Asui.
Uh-huh.
Actually, the Masha Asa Asui is the one that has a negative valence, and Zariz v'Niskar is a neutral.
You could do that. Yeah, I agree.
And like, just the way I hear what stuff is done sounds negative to me, which is just the use of English. But I don't think it's so far-fetched to say Masha Asa Asui.
I agree with you.
Is the way it's said.
But I think that in the Shami's version of Nikneha Mekach is the equivalent of Masha Asa Asui.
They're not using the same phrase.
That's true, they're not. But I don't. I think replacing Masha Asa Asui with Zariz v'Niskar is. Right, is interesting. Okay, yes, Alex.
I would say that perhaps our value judgments are too strong. And that Harez Azariz and Niskar is not that such positive, maybe it's slightly positive. And Masha Asa Asoi is not so resigning to negative, it's sort of just
Yeah, and then you could say match, you know, match has, right? You could say there is a scar that's a plus one, and you have a mayut that's a minus two.
Well, yeah, so I would say that perhaps we're giving too much credence to the length of the language.
Okay, that's pretty too much power, not credence. Yeah. Too much power. Okay, then your Yerushalmi has this mysterious line, "Asu midat hadin king." Right, midat hadin. I'm sure the Rambam must have a really beautiful. He says to Yerushalmi, if he doesn't, you should write it. Alright. And that is a transition to the Omer Lechavira Tsei Vekakli Mechath Poni Velach Lechachol Latzmo HaRez Ezeri Vizim Skar V'Nekan Mechath Ela Shenahag Minhag Ramayut. Right, yes.
What seems bizarre to me about this is that it's really, it seems like this makes more sense, meaning when we're talking about din, when we're talking about a financial case, the phrase "harezes arizin iskar v'nikne hamekach," right? That makes sense in that context. Even though when we brought the line originally, we brought it in relationship to kedushin. So it really seems like it should be the opposite, right? It should be we have this line va'af, you know, the midata kedushin ken. Right, so it seems like we reverse engineered it.
So you're assuming you know what the line means. It means it's not only true about condition, it's also true about Ramana.
Right, even though the line originally, or seems like it might have originally come from Ramana.
Assuming that your interpretation of the phrase is correct, right, then that is a difficulty, right? Or we could say so that your interpretation of the phrase must not be correct because right, then it generates this. So that's it. Do you think that line, Afnidad Din Kain, is part of the Tosefta or a transition in the Gemara? In your Talmud?
I mean, I would guess it's probably the show.
Okay, so you think it's interjection, not part of the text. I think that's going to make a large difference. That's how you understand it. Okay, so we have, right,
it doesn't...
Yeah?
I mean, it depends... I don't know. I'm saying, assuming the word is actually lemeidat, meaning we learn out.
So not lemeidat anymore.
Lemeidat
hadin. Not about midas hadin, about lemeidat.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't about midas hadin.
Right. So the word lemeidat is not going to be a tosefta.
Because it's...
That's just not a tosefta. Well, I'm saying that's just not a word that would show them tosefta. It's an Aramaic word. It's...
Okay. Well, plausible argument. Yeah, then you have to figure out how carefully does the Tosefta, does Yerushalmi preserve the system of verba in the Tosefta?
You're saying they just replace the Tosefta transition with a Yerushalmi version transition, but it's just a translation of Tosefta and not...
Yes.
Oh, okay, but it's certainly not the words of the Tosefta. Okay, fine.
Okay, I have to figure out how consistently, how does the Tosefta quoted in the Yerushalmi?
Right.
How often does Aramaic infiltrate that kind of issue? Yes?
But the next line is in Hebrew, so...
Well, so let's talk, what we really have
because it's going to afflamate that had to, I mean, it's comparing two cases.
Maybe.
One from a Tosefta, one from...
No, this one, we have both cases in the Tosefta. And all we have, really what you have is, you have the Tosefta, in the Tosefta, right? But the question is, Yerushalmi really is commenting on our Mishnah. Our Mishnah doesn't have the Mechav case, right? Let's remember that, right? Our Mishnah doesn't have the Mechav case. Yerushalmi is, to me, is probably also related to the Mishnah. And so we have this, first it replaces the line, Mekadesh L'Sheni, with this whole long speech. There is an iskar al shenagol minagra mayut, and then it quotes the Karl case in Tosefta, and right, with that line on the end as well. So probably this is just a one long continuation, right? One long comment on the Mishnah. That would be my bet, right? Is that what we do in the Mishnah is we replace the Mikdash of the Sheni with there is an iskar, etc., and then we add it and say, by the way, Tosefta also says the same case, also has a case of Mecca, and the question is whether Afel Midas Adin Kane means, right, is just the introduction to that second case, right, the case of the Sefta adds. Okay, then we have narrative. Rabbi Zeira make come alone, the Chami Lechavrei Zavi and Zvina, right, the Ma'alele Ilavei. So Rabbi Zeira, so Mekal Pavili means cursed, is from Kola. So he would curse somebody who saw his friend making a purchase. Where I think the reasonable interpretation is, and he outbids him.
Does he just drive the price up?
Or does he drive the price?
Right, that's what I...
Okay, So he does something, so let's be more precise, and he does something which raises the price for the, well, either raises the price to the other person or he outbids him. Right? Malele ilave. He raises him regarding it.
Yeah, or he raises the price by outbidding.
Who is
meaning
the person?
He curses the second person. Right? A is
right?
A is making a purchase. Right? Let's suppose let's put this on eBay. Okay? So so Ave is bidding on something that he has wanted for a very long time. Okay, I don't know what
French
the
press.
Is. French press. French press. Fine. French press. Okay, and you finally see the perfect one for sale on eBay. And you mention it to me, and I go right out and I bid higher. Now you can outbid me again. Right now the question is: first of all, like, could be I just win? Right, so now I have the French press. And then I tell you I sell it to you for 19% more than I paid for it, or alternatively, it could be that it just forces right that you already put the automatic bid in on eBay, and all I'm doing is you bid up to 20, but it was only up to 10. I bid 12.50. Now you have to pay 15. Right, that's how eBay works, right? You put a maximum in.
Yes, it's true. It just doesn't seem you don't know that.
So now it matters whether I know that or not. I don't know. We don't know.
It matters hugely, but it seems difficult.
No, but I know you're willing to pay more than 10.
You know I'm willing to pay more than 10, but you don't know that my maximum bid is only 15.
Right, no, but
so if you'd bid 16, you'd be out of luck, and you'd be paying $16, which means only worth 10.
That's right. So I'm taking a gamble that the other guy will actually take my offer.
That seems to be, like, I see what you're saying. It seems to be that it sort of illustrates that that's not a great way of reading this text. I think the better way is to say, I think the way the Kobane Da read it was that it was like forming a cartel.
The first case is the eBay case, except that it's just a bluff. Meaning I'm not stuck with it. It's not like the eBay case where I'm stuck with it if I win the bidding. I'll just tell the guy I was kidding.
So let's read through the Corveda on this case. Okay, so the first case says Tamiha raises a Rizvini scar. So he says the Iri the Sha'in lo isha ubanim. So we're referring to the case of the Mishnah, right? The case in it, right? So X says to Y, "Go marry, right? Please go arrange for me to marry Jane Doe." And Y goes and marries Jane Doe himself. Yes, is that the case?
That's what he says.
Yeah. You all agree?
No.
Yeah.
What's his nickname? Mecca, right?
Well, so what's he commenting? He's commenting. He's commenting So we're dealing with the case. Okay, so the case is, we're agreed, right? X says to Y, please deliver this ring on my behalf to Jane Doe, and Y goes and delivers his own ring to Jane Doe instead. And the category is he says Zariz v'niskar, v'niknei ha'mekach ela shenahag v'nahag ramayu. So the Korban Eda explaining Hareza Zariz v'niskar. Says we're only talking about a case where Y does not have a wife and children previously. Right? Therefore, Lekach Nikra Zariz, he's called Zariz, Delo Avid Isura, because he has not performed any prohibition. He would not be a Zariz, right? So Zariz is, it means you have right cannot occur if you're sinning. Delo Avid Isura, Umikayan Kirtza Zaribya, right? So Zariz is an evaluative term, which means you have not done an Isra and you have fulfilled the mitzvah. So Zariz is a thumbs up. Viniskar, Shiyesh lo isha dav leit rachav, right? So Zariz is a morally evaluative term, and Viniskar is a practically evaluative term. Unfortunately, the Karmater never gets back to explain what El Shinahad Minhag Ramayut means, and how we're supposed to deal with somebody who is Zariz and Viniskar, and yet Nahag Minhag Ramayut. Yes, sir.
Why is it really relevant if he's doing clear beer, but like, even without that, it still doesn't take away his, him, the
Minhag Ramayut. That's right, but the Korbanator never explains Minhag Ramayut.
He really explains Zariz. Like, it makes it sound like, had he been married before this the second wife, he wouldn't be Zariz. Like,
that's right, he wouldn't be Zariz.
Because there's no mitzvah.
Because he'd be sinning.
But he's complaining about a bunch of different things. The issue I had is that he broke the shlichus. Regardless of the mitzvah at hand,
that's right, he never explains Minhag Ramayut. I don't think the Venice Yerushalmi has anything different, so I don't think you can explain it on the basis of the term not being in his, not being in his Gemara. I don't think right. At least you should check.
That's how I'm going
to
check.
I don't think. I don't think. So Bar Ilan has both versions. I don't think so. Yeah.
I feel like it's because for him, Min Hagaron, it's clear, right? He did something not good, and then he's explaining the reason he's scar. How can it be that there's something good about this when we all know it's something, right? That's has some sort of moral ickiness to it, right? And then he explains, oh, actually, it was for right. He was doing a mitzvah, so there is an element, a positive element.
Could be, or you could read it more radically as saying, if there is Miniskar, even though he was in the Hagbo Minhagra Layut.
Right.
If Ella, right, if Ella can be, but it's not good enough, or Ella could be, and therefore it doesn't matter that.
Right.
So we don't know which one he has.
But in either case, right, I think if it makes sense that you start out with the fact that, like, there clearly is something icky about this, and then, okay.
Right, the question is, do we say, and even though there was some good, but it's still really icky,
right.
Or do we say, and even though it's icky, but there's good. As long as there's enough good. And that's why it matters whether they had a wife and children religiously.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Obviously, the best example of this would be
Yaakov,
who's the Yorish.
Yaakov is the, Yaakov is the Yorish, right in front of Esav, and he's ready. He gets in first. So if Yaakov's Yorish, then he's Skar Elish, and Aglov, and Hagar Bayut. Right? Not bad.
Well, he does,
but
not. He gets the Bracha.
Yes, it might very well be, right? So. And would we say, right, so if we read this, if somebody saw that Yaakov, Zariz bin Iskar al-Shadagol Minhagra Mayut, would we think that the important term is Minhagra Mayut? Or do we think the important term was Zariz bin Iskar?
Well, both. Why are we...
Well, we look at both, right? It seems a very lishma, right? He did a good thing, but he gets punished anyway. Okay. Asa midat ha-din came, so the Koraneta reads that the way Yesh did. Right? It's not only this of a heter, but even of dinim amenos. Ukidim ha-sik ha-rei says Zariz. So now here, instead of the parallelism, the Karmelita has to have fun, and he says, look, just like getting married and having children is a mitzvah de'oraisa of Puravu, so is
making
a living. Making money. I raise it on sake with their heretics. U'mitzvahi. K'mo shekasa b'shulchan arach arachayim so sevidiyo, which I gave you the bottom of the page, right, where the Ramah says that there are all sorts of trips that are considered mitzvah trips, and therefore you can get on boats before Shabbos and things like that because you're engaged in a mitzvah.
Or get on caravans,
mm-hmm.
which will inevitably require you to break Shabbat to save your life because
right.
of the middle of the desert.
Yeah, that's right. So here we have a category, you know, where Oseik Kederes Eretz is a mitzvah, where you might have thought this was just hyperbole, and the Karmelita says, no, it's not hyperbole. Right? This is real. Right? This is real. This is rigorous halachic terminology. Now, to really be rigorous instead of the analogy, you'd have to say this is a case where somebody would not have a living otherwise, just like you couldn't be Mekayim Puravu. Puravu didn't have a wife otherwise. He doesn't set that up.
Well, you can get a different one.
What if you're already rich? Does he think you shouldn't do this if you're already rich? Because you don't need this to make a living?
Well,
right, it sounds like he thinks you're not the reason he's scarred if you don't have a wife. Right? If you already have a wife. So it's the same thing, you shouldn't be the reason he's scarred if you already have a living. Yes, Tikkun.
Maybe Puravruvi has a shear and Sheriff Harris doesn't.
Yeah, so it might be that Puravruvi only two and it's just Shevet afterwards making a living, the more money, the better. Always a mitzvah.
Shevet should also be a mitzvah.
Yeah, but Shevet's only drabbanan. Yes, Shevet.
Yeah,
he scores only.
I think what you said is that if he already had a wife, then not only would it not be Zari when you star, but it would be...
Mitzvah Ramayut, yeah.
No, but it would be a sur.
Yes.
Why are we saying something? If the action isn't a sur inherently, then why does it become...
It's not really be a sur. It would be it would be a bad thing to do. It would just be Minhag
Ramayut. Right. But
I don't think we should say a sur. I think we should say Minhag Ramayut. Although, yeah, I think we should let's leave it at that for now. Okay, we'll have to figure out. But obviously, the question we're begging is whether it's a sur to be a Ramayut.
Right. Unless you have a good reason.
Right. So is Minhag Ramayut the kind of thing like Lashon Hara? Which is asur unless you have to do it, in which case it's a mitzvah.
Okay.
Right, whereas the kind of thing that is never asur. Okay. So now we go back to the Yerushalmi. So we had Rabbi Zera cursed somebody who saw his friend. So this can't be done in ignorance. He saw his friend Zavin Zvina. in, you know, which sound like he's in the process of making a purchase, and we can define that some other point. Umale li ilave. Amar Rabbi Avon b'shem Rabbi Zeira. Af le'ose ilave chavila. Rabbanan kariyale this pasuk in Iyov. On this, the Kabbalah says, Rabbi Zeira, mekal is mekalel, lo tan shiruin chaveiro. Now, Zavin Zina, he puts in the word rotzeli kach the bar min hashuk. Right? Not he's actually purchasing it, but he desires to purchase it.
Well, that's just a way of saying trying, right? Because
yeah.
If he's already bought it, it's too late.
Well, unless
no,
you...
Unless
he's
because you could, at least me and Sam might have misinterpreted the case in the Yishkali based on Kobaneda and saying this isn't outfitting, this is price gouging. You're the trying to sell you something, and you don't really want it, so you raise the price.
Are you not sorry, say again?
I don't know if this is correct, even based in Korban Haida, but when we first read it, we thought the Rosef made us think that it's price gouging, that you know that your friend really wants to buy something, so you're going to raise the price.
You don't have a third party, you think it's just the
yeah.
The second party.
Yeah.
I would have to be convinced of that.
Like...
Well, let's take a look. Yes, Abby, what do you want to say?
I was just going to say, I also really thought it was price gouging.
Okay, so let's read
it. It's difficult to say that it's like I coming in. If I come in and I bid for the same item, is that really raising the price on someone? It's if I'm making a real bid to do something, I'm really raising the price on myself.
So let's read it through and see if this is sustainable. Let's read it. Rav Mikalel Otan Shorid Chavir Rav Tzeli Kaptav Rav Nashuk Umiyaker Hashar, right? And he causes the price of that item to rise. And the Akira Shar, it sounds like he's having that, right? It's not that he raises the price, it's that he affects, right? The Shar is the market price, not the price of the specific item.
I'm the only one selling umbrellas here, then I change the market price. This sounds like umbrellas in a rainstorm.
Okay, so it could be you're talking about monopolist, right? You want to see, right? But now he says, Umar bet, says, Vomer shir bet bishar. So bishar is what you'll pay, not what you'll charge. I thought it was right. So I don't know how you can do that with the sell as a seller. Right. So the Amir Shir Ben Biskar has to be a second purchaser saying that he will, right? That he will pay more. I don't think that can be the seller. Yes, Ibrahim.
Am I going to just mean that you think he'll get more money for it? Literally, just get more
schar
for it.
Okay, so I don't think that's true idiomatically. I can't. Idiomatically, I think your bevi schar means you'll pay more. I don't think it means you'll get more.
It would be your bel lo
schar. Yeah,
it'd
be whatever.
I think it'd be something else entirely.
Sure, I think
this is
a relationship. Is it omer shir bevi schar and therefore miyakeh hashar?
Right.
Or
so
is it two separate things?
I think it's miyakeh hashar by saying.
Right. I would assume the good contemporary example is gambling. Where some of the heavy better, let's say a sports bet.
I think eBay is fine.
Because I'm not directly betting. It's you have heavy rumors that a lot of money is going to flood in on one team, so the line to bet changes because because you have to keep the market at even. So someone says he's going to pay a lot for stuff, for a lot of things, so the overall price of that in the local market will go up, even for his friend.
Yeah, I think, by the way, that the mem and the mefer in the last line is probably a typo and it's supposed to be your baby schar. I think that's right. It's still kind of covered with the rest of our both schar.
That sounds to me. The way I read this was that, I see someone coming to buy something from me. He wants to likach davar min hashuk. I raise the price on it because I know he wants to buy this. I'm going to get more money and he's going to have to pay more.
Right, so I don't think that your baby schar. I think your very scar can't mean I get more. It has to mean that you will pay more. Right?
No, so
saying that he will pay. I think so.
I
hear from Abhay the same suggestion. All I can tell you is it doesn't. I don't think it can mean that.
It's also
I can be wrong.
It's a weird and redundant cause and effect, right?
Okay. I don't want to get too tangled. Let's go on. I don't want to get too tangled. Okay. So now So now he says, Kesher im Shar Mokrim. Now this is going to support your reading more because it's all seller.
It supports your reading because this is what the second.
The first one must be different. Okay.
One seller and multiple sellers. There are
other sellers.
Okay. So Kesher im Shar Mokrim, Shalolin korlish pone chafetzima tzrichim lo, ela kishar hayoker. All right, so I see the arba, right? So the second possibility, the second thing is where we apply this pasuk to you, and we apply this pasuk to you if you form a cartel that forces, right, where you, basically you engage in what we call collusion, right, where you create, you artificially inflate the price by agreeing to sacrifice what is your natural interest, but all of you gain if you raise the price, as long as you don't risk the buyer going somewhere else. Right, so you get right. So the Karaita thinks that this is illegitimate, right? For to take advantage of an artificial monopoly is bad.
So I don't think this is an artificial monopoly. I think it's a targeted collusion. Meaning we're not going to price gouge on this item. We're going to price gouge against you.
Yes, because we can afford. We can get away with it.
Right.
If we try to raise the price on everybody, then they bring in other merchants. But you're a rich guy, you're here, you only have half an hour. Right? Let's
you're
just
a
quit.
Whale.
Pardon?
You're a whale.
You're a whale. Okay. This is Major League Baseball and free agents. Right? That's the classic case of collusion. Right? Where at one point after Major League Baseball players won the right to negotiate freely as opposed to have to negotiate team by team. So the owners got together at least with the more expensive players and said, we all agree we're not going to offer anybody contracts more than 3 years, which was against their freedom of contract, and that was illegal, and they have to pay a huge fine.
You mean price fixing?
No. It wasn't price fixing. It was collusion. We didn't set what the price was. We just agreed we wouldn't compete above a certain price, and here they're going to agree we won't compete below a certain price. Right? Even though if we were negotiating one-on-one, it would be worth it to us to sell at that price. But we can gain that way. Okay, it's a very sophisticated notion. And this, in the end, he says, what is this? This is, a person who does this is porek yirat shemayim. That's what the yirat shekaya zot means. And he is moneya mireyu hacheset shayalo lasotimo. Now this is a very scary interpretation that not engaging in this practice is a chesed. As opposed to, right? You know, so he doesn't, right? So he's stuck because of the language of the pasuk. And saying, well, you shouldn't have raised the price on him, that's a chesed. And if you do raise the price on him in this way, you're abandoning Yirat Shamayim. But he very carefully doesn't say that you're stealing. He doesn't say that you're acting illegally. I think there's a lot of sophistication in the Korban Eidah. On the other hand, the theory...
Maybe it's like a chesed who of Nichratala in any Bnei Adam.
I don't know. I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced in the end that something coherent is going to come out of the Korban Eidah. I think it's very cool that he puts all this in. I'm not convinced in the end that anything coherent is going to come out. Yes.
Well, for now, I know it makes a big difference, but this seems to be the same Rabbi Zera who was involved in the Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Gidel dispute.
Sure.
So.
Could be.
It's cool.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the first of these two cases is like not. This, when you have like supply side collusion, right?
Yeah.
You benefit. Whereas interfering in someone else's sale, just to be a jerk, like you don't get anything out of that.
So that's a reading for, you know, and if you want the cases parallel, you'll get 10 toward obvious reading. We don't know. We have the same problem we have in the Bavli and Spade. We don't know what the connection between these three cases is. Is it worse to be cursed? Or is it worse to have to remove your Shemayim from each other, from yourself, by not doing chesed?
Or is it just that Rabbi
Avon
is reading Rabbi Zera?
And it's his reading Rabbi Zera. That's why you get cursed. Okay. Could also be. The Sherei Korban offers two other interpretations in the end, right? That he says, Osei Levei Kavila doesn't mean his interpretation. Some people think it has something to do with merchandise, right? Or... Right, Chavila Loshon Schora means you're somebody that it's something to do with a bundle of merchandise, or it's actually a Chavila Mamish, Kigon Shabbat, Chavila Zakot, Bachemila Min Ahetzir, the Kadam Zev in Atlah, and he says correctly, Yishneim Inam the Kubarim. Right, because he didn't bother explaining what they meant, yes.
Where does the mitzvah
therefore
fit into this history of
collusion? I don't know, it might be that we hold that getting money is always a mitzvah, and the more money, the better.
I'm very much worried that one.
Could be. I'm not. I think with, you know, with Rishali had a very hard time trying to figure out what to do. And sometimes you end up betwixt and between, like, you really want to interpret the word, you really want to interpret it differently than the Bavli, but you don't have no framework except for the Bavli. So you end up interpreting it sort of like the Bavli, but not quite. And, you know, you have no halakhic tradition to relate it to necessarily, because you don't have anyone passing this way, and you just get stuck. I think this is one of the cases where you just get stuck. It's really, the suggestions are interesting, but I would be very hesitant to build a whole theory out of the carbon idea. Yeah, that would be my take, but you can disagree with me.
I mean, there's a
lack,
though.
The Mitzvah Derech. Yes. Yeah, I'm saying the Korban Eidah is bringing it from the Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, we could talk about what is Mitzvah Derech Eretz, and, you know, what level of mitzvah do you have to be to enable going on trips.
And you can suggest the Ramah just means that as a limit of hoop.
You mean that also? Okay.
It's only one
thing. Lots of ways to get it taken with excessive seriousness. But there are other places, you know, that shows up. One of the really interesting sort of, you know, I guess we call quasi halachic categories you have is the mitzvah of making a living. And it has all sorts of interesting, you know, interesting things hanging around. They're not quite as big as Torah Briot, but interesting. Okay. There's also the Karban Eidah has fun, right? He writes Rashi, he writes Tosfot, he calls his Rashi the Kuntros, right? He's having lots of fun. Right? It's not Perish, because it's Pirashti the Kuntros, right? That's my Rashi. Okay. Let's go on to the so we have we have the Gemara. Right, Shnayim Shalaku Parat Ubna, Eza Shalakat Rishon Yishchat Rishon, but Kamin Karam Hasheni Zachat. So this seems like another case along the Amahamayim axis. Right, why does it matter who goes first here, though? Yeah.
Because he can check both of them on the same day, so if, you know, both want it, or one specifically needs it more, then if the other one gets to it first, then they can't have it.
So here, whoever chefs first, the other person loses a day. Right, that's right. That's the price. So the price is the right to chef today. So then we have a Gemara which introduces the words l'inyan v'natnan, which sound like they're very parallel to after midah din came. And a braita which says Zariz v'niskar, and defines the terms Zariz and Niskar. So Zariz is the law of Ad Isura, and Niskar is to ka'ach, right, is to be ka'achal Bisra. Okay, so now you can, right, so now you, it's obvious, right, the Korban Eidah, in his interpretation, when he said the law, right, he's trying very hard to stay within the confines of the Bavli.
I think he has the Bavli.
Right?
He had the mitzvah to the Bavli.
That's right. He's trying very hard to stay in the confines of the Bavli. But at the same time, he's trying to read Yerushalmi. Right? So again, what happens very often in commentaries in Yerushalmi is they want to read, right, every heresy in Yerushalmi begins with a statement that all previous commentaries have read the Yerushalmi as if it were the Bavli. And I will not do that. I will read the Yerushalmi independently. And they list all the previous commentaries which said they would do the same thing and how they fail. Now, the reason that they have to do this is because, you know, because you can't read a text without a Masara. Right? These were texts that were intended to be taught from memory. And really, the way I always frame it is that the language of rabbinic literature is intended as a mnemonic for what you have learned, and not as a text from which you should learn. And therefore, if you have no Masara, the text will always be incomprehensible. It was never intended to be a text you could get things out of. It's only a text that you could reconstruct things from. And therefore, there is no way to read the Yerushalmi without the Bavli. Because you don't have the faintest idea what it's talking about, except by looking at parallel Bavli. And then the notion that you can import the context from the Bavli somehow and then start from scratch entirely, really, really hard to do. So it's not a fault of the commentary of the Yerushalmi that can't do that, because there is no alternative, I think. Some of the cases are a little bit more egregious. The Rav Sirleo one, who literally rewrites the Yerushalmi so that all the terms are changed into Bavli terms. That's a little bit excessive. But it's not so convincing that he's just reading the Yerushalmi independently. But it's easy to read, right? Sure. His Yerushalmi just flies, right? It's just like a Bavli. So here the Shurei Karba knows that Zariz means just a little Bavli Surah. That can't be enough for him. So he says the Lovati Surah, And Umekayim is a fair rivian. Viniskar, the Gemara says very plainly, it's called Achal Bishra. That's why the Karban can't say the Niskar just means you get the mitzvah. The Niskar has to be practical because the Bible here says the Niskar means practical.
It could be Mekayim Per Riv is his explanation of why Lo Abed Yisurah.
Yes, could be that. But I think what he's done is he's assuming that the terms in the Yerushalmi mean the same thing as above, mean what the Bible explains them to mean, and then trying to figure out how you fit that into the language of the Yerushalmi, and being willing to change it if the Yerushalmi puts you under pressure.
But that's totally what the Quranizer just does all the time.
Yeah, that's right. Just watch what it's doing. So I don't know. So now Rav Yosef says, L'inyan vinatna. This is where, right? So what does it mean? Rav Yosef says, L'inyan vinatna. So Rashi says, Hadikatani nishol atav rishon nishkod rishon. Lav l'inyan isur v'heter. Okay, so here, for Rashi has a very complicated notion. It's not that there are two cases. There's a case which is Isra v'Heter and a case which is Mekach, and we're saying this is not only true in the Isra v'Heter case, it's also true in the Mekach case. What he says is we have a case which has two possible axes to analyze it along. We can analyze the question of whether you're allowed to switch order, or we can analyze it around the question of if you come to court and fight about the order, what's the outcome? And so for Rashi, L'inyan Vinatan means, right, that this is, that it's not only saying that you're allowed to do this if you agree, it even tells you what will happen in Beit Din if you come afterwards. So that is fundamentally, that is very, very difficult to read into the Yerushalmi, so the other Korban Eidah was left on his own. But yet, I think that all of us recognize that it's very, very hard not to see these phrases as parallel.
Why? I'm saying,
yeah.
One's a straight coming off the Mishnah telling us what the purpose of the Mishnah is, or that's what Linyan Dinatan. The Yerushalmi is, I mean, we're it's somehow joining either as a conjunction or as a something to Toseftas, to standards from Toseftas, to types of Toseftas, to somethings. It's some sort of bridge. This is not a bridge. This is a straight-up explanation of the Mishnah.
So that's one way of looking at it. The other looking at it is saying we have two texts,
The Bavli doesn't have two cases. The Bavli's got one case.
The Bavli has the case of the Mishnah.
And then nothing.
And
so
then another Braita. It's a bridge between. In the Bavli, it's a bridge between the Mishnah and the Braita.
But the Braita, which is explaining the Mishnah, it's not a parallel Braita.
Okay. So I think it's an awful coincidence for the same phrase to appear in the context of the Rizv and Iskar in both contexts and have it just be random. You think it's not? I'm okay.
So how do you read the words of the Yerushalmi? Aflamidas adinkei, meaning what?
I have the faintest idea how to read the words of the Yerushalmi. I'm totally, again, you know, happily, in the summer I don't have to explain things.
If
I started your program, then you can demand that I explain it. Right now I just want you to think about it. Yes. Yeah.
What does Rashi mean by Isra-Veter? Like, is he referring to Isra-Veter in the realm of Otovet Beno?
Yeah.
Or is he talking about the relationship before it comes to Beit Din?
I think he's talking about the relationship before it comes to Beit Din.
Why is that Isra-Veter?
Yeah.
Because you might think you're bound by the order.
Isra-Veter sounds so should have something to do homage with the kashrut.
Yeah,
right?
I thought it was Yoredeya.
Yeah.
Especially because of the last line, which is Lomad Isura.
Yeah, I thought
think that this is part of the din of Otovet
Beno. No, right. This is just a din of how you're supposed to carry out your business, which is why the second the safe of the Mishnah is there, right?
Lomad Isra-Veter. Why? Shim Ratzah Rishon Lishchot Rishon Lasheni Yamtina Machar.
No, Mutar.
What's Mutar?
That he can eat from the second guy who went first can eat from his.
Why shouldn't he be able to?
Because you might think it's the law of Otobe Epino, whoever buys it first goes first, and that's the only way it can be kosher.
Right, why would I think that? Only thing is, wait, it could be kosher?
Because Rav Yosef had to say something, so we have to make up a havamina that
wait,
he was kosher.
Because of kashrut as opposed to because of ethic?
No, couldn't it be that Rashi's saying, meaning
but
Rav Yosef comes
each of the heads doesn't mean ethic.
Is right. Linyan Dina Tanan saying that originally this was taught for Dina, and then Rashi saying it's so obvious that it couldn't have been taught for Isra Heter initially, because if you want to check your animal, just go ahead and check your animal. But for Dina, if someone sues you about checking the animal, that's when it would come in.
Yeah, right.
Sorry, say it again?
That Rav Yosef's Linyan Dina Tanan is not like the Yerushalmi's Af Lumivat Hadin Tanan.
Uh-huh.
That Rav Yosef is saying, this was not originally taught by Chulin about Otobe Epino. That's not what this din is originally about. It's originally about Mamono. And Rashi's explaining it's not originally about Isra Heter because that's an intuitive and obvious thing. And the hard case is when someone sues you about whether you can check their animal first.
Hard case.
Harder of a case.
You mean the case that needs a mission to teach us.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I don't know. I think that Rashi obviously is scrambling somewhat. It's a very long Rashi to explain the words. And then the Lo'ova Yisura, right, all of a sudden gets you into that notion that Lo'ova Yisura means Sheikdim Da'atzmo Shlo Yovoli Da'Yisura. Right, he did it early so he wouldn't run the risk of shefting, right, of shefting after the other guy shefted. Because right, really the issue is what happens if two people buy, right? It only makes sense, right? We only do this as long as both people are in the same place, right? But the fun case is two people walk into a farm. There's a cow and its child is there, and we buy them separately. Now we walk off our different ways. Now what do we do?
You chef whenever you want.
Because
you have no reason to assume anyone's shefting on the same day, except 4 days a year. Fresh cows.
But your mizariz v'niskar is if you shef at the crack of dawn the next morning, then you know you got in before the other guy.
Right. That's why the law of nisur means you guaranteed that you.
That's right. Right. So right. So that's the answer. Right. So it could be we're dealing with a case where you don't know what the other person did.
If I know that you're planning to shef your cow today, and I go and shef the cow's mom like an hour before you, that's fine.
Apparently.
Like, you're doing the Isor, and, like, I'm in the clear.
Like, so if the other person's going to... So there are two... Right, so what Yesh is saying is really only... We only allow for two possibilities. Possibility A is that we'll never find out what the other person did. We have no way of knowing. And possibility is that we both know exactly what the other person's doing. If we both know the other person's doing, so I chef first, that prevents you.
Right.
And if we don't know, then the earlier I chef, the less likely it is that I'm running the risk that you'll chef for the same day.
No, it could be in...
You chef it before me.
So you're planning to check?
How realistically? That's the issue, right? The issue is maybe we went our separate ways.
Does it matter if it's a shtayim shlachtum as opposed to just one and then one?
They were there originally.
Or is like the Baal HaBayit trying to tell you that I just sold the cow, this cow's mom?
If he sold the cow's mom a week ago, he'd have the same problem. Why didn't he have to tell you that? Or he sold it to me, right?
No, unless the assumption is I bought the cow
for
to slaughter it.
The assumption is that people always check cows on the day they buy them.
Yeah, which seems to be the assumption, right?
No, not the assumption.
It's just saying that you win if you do. Whenever you buy a cow, right? If you are running the risk that when you check it, you'll be violating the Tovia Beno unless you know that it's not as good.
It's a sham, this is why they bought it.
So the answer is, so we end up saying that if you buy a calf from somebody, right, so then, right, you can't, right, then you can tell the owner, don't sheft it till tomorrow. Don't sheft your cow today, because I intend to sheft your calf tomorrow, because you're buying, right? And the owner should have to wait till tomorrow. If you say I'm shefting the cow today, he can't try to beat you to it, because that would be a violation of the terms of the market. The terms of the market is that when I buy my cow, I don't expect you to do something which, after the fact, prevents me from shefting.
Right.
But tomorrow, right, let's suppose I don't shef my cow today. So we're back in the same situation as anyone else tomorrow. I don't know when you're shefting your cow. You don't know when I'm shefting my cow.
Hence that they bought them together, no?
So one or the other makes it, you know, so now I know that the other, that
that's
adds
why
a certain...
That's the problem. Obviously, they assume you have the right to chef your cat the day that you buy it, and any other day you have to check.
But now they're two people.
Right.
Each of them has a right to chef it. That's why we have a problem.
Yeah, that's the puzzle.
Yeah.
Right? So assuming they're in the same place, and they know about each other, and they're aware of what they're doing, hence the...
I don't know if they, again, all I know is that they both know that the other cow is on the market, and that the, and there's another person who has just as much a right to chef as they do. Whether they're going to know what the other person is doing, that I don't think it says.
Does it matter when it's time with the bait team, when they're going to the bait team, that it's a barrel?
I don't think so.
That doesn't emphasize.
No, I don't think it's right.
Just,
no, it just means the fellows.
It's, it's another mission on cool, and there are 4 days a year, plus maybe a fifth, where you have to assume that, someone's chefing an animal. Otherwise, I can assume they're not. I mean, it could be in her case. If I know you plan on chefing the animal today, and I chefed the mother this morning, so I have to tell you. It could be if I know what you're planning, I have to tell you, and I already did it. But, like, there's no reason to assume. You have, I mean, you have a large statistical robe that every animal, almost every animal's mother and her child was not chefed on this day. So I can just act normally. I don't have to, like, do a family test and find out everything else. Everything.
You can't, because it's impractical.
Right. But if I know, so I know.
So I mean, here,
and that's why Zari's is. I guarantee it's Rosh Queen's Shaloh,
yeah.
Shaloh, right? That I guarantee that I will never be over the Severa, because that's the only reason that Shaya.
I checked immediately.
Yeah.
That seems to even talk
about
you. I mean.
No, but we're also talking about a case where it's possible to have a visiting case.
Right, where we know.
Where both parties know each other. Right, and one part, and you're about to chef, and you say, "Hey, no, I need to chef today." And now we come to Bezin to find out who can chef first.
Right.
Wait, so, what does Zacha mean?
Zacha?
Yeah.
He wins.
Is that a moral claim? Is that?
No, it's not. It's not. It's not. It's not. He merits.
Right.
It's
so
he wins.
It's
like a factual claim.
Okay, fine. So, if you slaughter your cow first, you have to slaughter your cow first.
Yes, you won.
Why do they need to tell us that?
Why do they need to tell us?
Obvious, right?
Unless. The idea is...
We might punish you. We might say you jumped the line, so you, right, you can't eat the meat until the other guy can chef it.
So then we are making it. We're making the same claim that we made before, the, like the Maasai Asui. Like, okay, we're not going to make you do... So it's somewhat of a moral claim, or at least it's...
It's an absence of a negative moral valence, right? Or at least of a sufficient negative moral valence to undo it, right, to undo anything.
Right. So this says that if the second person precedes the first...
Yes.
It's fine, but if the second person perceives the first after he asks the first person, then he's bad, right? Because if he goes through, once you go to a bait team, then...
No, they don't have to ask the first. Second person starts, and the first person objects and drags the second, and drags the person to bait. It doesn't mean you asked. You went ahead, and the other guy said, the other guy put a preliminary injunction on you.
Other way around. The Rishon wants to...
The first Rishon wants to... Yeah, sorry, the second one wants to stop him. So, right, so that's the other thing that Rashi says. He says that the Chayim Linyan Dina is going on the Eza Shalokach Rishon Yishchor and not on the Im Shachar Hasheni. Rashi said the whole Dina only applies to the first case. Because the Im Shachar Hasheni is a post facto. Post facto, there's no point going to Beit Din. So Rashi says the Dina only applies to the first case.
That doesn't seem consistent then, because if the Rishon wants to chef this cow and the Sheni says don't,
Yeah. Then
the Beit Din says, sorry, you're out of luck. But if the Rishon wants to chef this cow, the second one and the Sheni just does it, he's fine. He doesn't get in trouble, he hasn't done anything wrong. So there's no incentive here for you to go to Beit Din if you're the Sheni. You just chef, because then you
Well, once you're summoned, you're under subpoena.
No, but you're not. The thing is, the Rishon doesn't summon you. The Sheni brings the Rishon to the Beit Din.
Yeah, so because Rashi says that the Nidina only applies to the first case. He doesn't tell you what would happen if the second guy tried to chef and the first guy tried to drag the bed and be called a homer.
Okay.
Right? It just, I agree, Rashi's reading is forces you to make all sorts of complicated choices. And I'm not sure what shot in this button this is either. Most I'm interested in the term, we have all these interesting terms which don't explicitly tell you what the law is, even when they say Linyandina, and that confuse moral evaluation and outcome. And I want to put all those in our heads, and then plug them back into Aninat. And all these are cases that are kind of like Aninat Pishtacharar. Right? They're all cases where somebody gets something that might perhaps have gone to somebody else, right? By Hishtadlus, right? By engaging in some kind of initiative. So we're putting a, right. So we're doing is we're creating a whole framework of evaluative terms, and cases and outcomes, and somewhere in there we have to try and find a, see if we can find a direction for that right that will let us set precedent. Okay. So then I gave you a whole set of cases which people are called the shrines. So if you are, and sometimes you know, Russia is part of a complex of things you could be called. So for example, if you're an Azkanim, you could go to right, you could go to Gehenna, or we could say you're a Mamzer or a Ben Anida, and we could either say that as insults or we could say that as halachic categories that you are presumptively a Mamzer or a Ben Anida, right? You have cases like that. Yes, Shasha.
Just in the previous examples, like, I'm a little confused as to why aren't, if in principle a person who buys first should shecht first,
yeah,
and in principle the person with the boar closest to the Amatamayim should fill first, why aren't we enforcing those moral categories, and why are we kind of rewarding
again,
people
you're assuming
for being
in principle.
Quick?
Maybe it's not in principle, maybe it's just the default. If it's just Darkei Shalom, it's because we need some kind of order.
But Darkei Shalom is, you know, burying non-Jews and giving tzedakah to non-Jews.
Yeah, it's a good thing. But it doesn't, right? But it might be that everyone agrees that, look, we need a default for when people show up early, but we don't want the default to discourage initiative.
They don't give aliyot to the first people to come to shul.
Maybe they should.
I did.
I'm sure that there are weekday minyanim, which make a point of giving aliyot to the people who show up before Baruch Hu,
no,
or before Brachos.
Instead, it goes Kohen Levi Yisrael, which is also in the Darkei Shalom.
Yeah, it's right. They have competing things. Okay. Okay. So if you're an Azkanim, you can go to Gehenna. You can be a Mamzer. You can right. You can be a Ben Nida, or you can be called a Rasha. Right, so we say that's saying going to Gehenna means, right, so we said, but you know, we're as playing the Gehenna, my Tan Rabbi Yehuda, Ditziv, Eiz Ish, or Heiz Ish Rasha Bifanav, Heiz Veiz Panim Nikra Rasha, Virasha Le Gehenna. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Are all of these equal, or is one worse than the other one?
We don't know.
Like, I just feel like going to Gehenna is the worst, but like being a Russia is not as bad as going to Gehenna.
Well, we say that being called a Russia means that you go to Gehenna. Right, that is what the Nikra Rasha means. Nikra Rasha means, right, means you are going to get it.
Well, being in Russia.
Well, let's be careful.
But now it sounds like Nikra Rasha is as bad as being a Russian. Because if Nikra Rasha means you're going to get them.
Well, it sounds like you're called a Russian, but who do you call a Russian? You're called a Russian by the Torah.
Yeah, so you are a Russian. No?
You are a Russian.
Yeah, so why is the language of Nikra Russian?
Good question. Right, why does that say Russia? Good question. Hold for a moment. Okay? If you're mitpal achorei beit haKnesset, you're called a Rasha, because it says, I'm sorry about the line there, saviv rasha'im mitalifu. Right, then we have a whole set of things. You're only called a Rasha if you don't turn your vocabulary all day. The fun story of Eliyahu. Okay, so the problem here is mitpal achorei beit haKnesset, how serious? Obviously it has to stand for something. Right, the question, right, so how serious would it take to make a Rasha? Yes, fine.
I'm wondering, like, why does the Gemara in Kedushin not bring a source for Nikra Rasha?
Oh. Okay. Good question. I don't know. Good question.
That was my point. That's a halachic statement. So that where all the later sources you bring in here actually have sort of not going to be Nikra Rasha. It's not relevant to the others, but the phrase Nikra Rasha just means the pasuk called Yer Rasha. It's
uh-huh.
actually a halachic statement that this person is a Nikra Rasha in halachic terms. And the only one that has that is the Anima Havik Karara.
All right, let's take it through. Yes, it's
I'm not sure I agree, because for all we know, Nikra Rasha means that you get the Din Barasha, because we just said that Nikra Rasha Rasha Gehenna. So maybe that's just always true.
Ooh. I don't know if that's a Din. That's a statement of divine...
Okay, so in the first one, Nikra Rasha, right, it's from the Pasuk and you go to Gehenna. And the second one, Nikra Rasha is from a pasuk, and you get killed by Eliyahu Navi.
It doesn't mean you go to Gehenna.
Pardon?
It doesn't mean you go to Gehenna.
No, we have no idea where the Eliyahu Navi victims go.
We also don't know if there's like a lot of this is, I mean, negative.
You know, maybe Leonidas shows up to kill you so you can have a kapara.
Yeah.
So you don't go to him. Okay. I have no idea. The third one, if you keep, right, even if you keep your Nidurum, you're still cold to Russia. We don't like people to make Nidurum. That's about the other thing. That's what you can get about one. Okay, number four. If you're a Talmud Chacham, you're not obeyed by Tnei Rav Kook. Then you are called to Russia, and you die young, and you forget all your learning.
This is a typo here. This is in Sanhedrin. This is, like, not in Kiddushin.
Number five.
Did
I skip that?
Number five, sorry, no, keep going.
Okay, yeah, well, number six dropped out somewhere.
eight, and eight.
Yeah,
we don't like Zuka.
Six and eight.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Okay, I wonder how that happened.
Eight is also gone?
Oh. Okay. Then we've got the Magbia. We've got Magbia Yado Chamiro, right? It's called the Rasha, which is the one that that one learns young.
Right. The thing is, this is immediately following the Rabbi Gidel and Rabbi Abba story.
Yeah.
Proceeding.
Oh,
not about
Magbia Yado Chamiro. Uh-huh. So seems to be part of the same complex.
I think there's a very different valence to this.
Yes.
Number five.
Number five.
Number five. That's the one that's in Sanhedrin.
That's
yeah.
So it's not in the story.
It's not in the story at all. That one, that's
what that's probably what happened. It's like, okay, I see what happened. Yes, okay.
This is supposed to be number six. This is the missing number six.
This is number six.
This is the missing number six. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Because the number five was put in
earlier. Yeah, yeah,
okay. Fine. Number seven is if you follow the coolest and Qumran. You follow the kulas of both Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Here we don't actually have a pasuk of needed on the spot.
Yeah, but the parallel of the Bible is that we're
just
Russia. Doesn't
say this is your Russia.
Okay. Fine.
The Bible has sources for everything and nothing else, except in the drush.
Okay. Right. Broad outcome is that we don't really know how whether Nicaragua is. You can't be sure that it's halachic. And the consequences can be all over the map. I think that right. That's the outcome I reach out to it.
Well, I never even had a thought in the condition so that it's a halachic statement. It didn't sound to me always like an exciting utterance, especially with the Nachman Navi analogy. But
okay. You would never have had that minute. Let's go look at the Rishonim and see if they did. Yes, they probably.
The one thing we do know about all the Nicarashi cases is that none of them are actually usher.
What?
Some of them are Sheikh Baltazas. None of them are actually usher.
Taking a nether, according to those sheikhs, think it's actually usher.
Raising your hand against your friend is not actually usher?
No.
Azut Panim is not actually
usher. Is it usher to take all kulas?
He called them the Hori Beit Knesset is not actually usher.
No!
So the word actually has a very interesting valence there.
The closest to get something being usher is not the going to be clear after, which is Sheikh Al Taza and not usher.
But what is it?
Sheikh Al Taza is usher.
No, it's not.
No.
Yes, it is. Now
you're not actually being
open.
And
because
you're
understanding you're being very literal.
You're
right?
Not proper. You're Nikar Mashiach.
Right, you're being shaved off.
That's why Nikar Mashiach can't be literal.
According to these Tanaim in the Darim, you've done an isser by being.
Who says?
Okay.
Visser?
We're all living in this very mismanaged world, right? Where usser really just right. Where usser is a formal legal category.
No. She's living. I blame you.
The Shulchan Aruch has a simon about how it's usser to daven achor beis
kneses.
That's
because he was a chassid.
Chassid
used to mean mekubal.
Yeah.
Only with Rabo, it's a violation of it's a bitul asay. So we can not use the word usher for that, but it's a bitul asay to not do it. Saying I don't think the claim stands up that none are actually usher.
I think that we have to put a history in, right? Some of these things may not have been actually usher, but became actually usher.
But what does it mean to say something is not usher when you're Nikra Rasha when you do it?
Well, that's why it can't be literal, because none of these things
are
usher.
Can you
be a Russia vicious attack?
Saying that there's no chiyah d'oraisa to stand for your Rebbe?
There is, but if you don't do it, it's Sheikh Al-Tasa, it's an overlap.
Well, the interesting question is, why is only a Talmud Chacham who's being
over
here?
I'll call it
Bidlos.
I'll
be
Russia, right? The Google
Mishnah.
The whole thing in
Yeah, Zoe.
Is,
I'm like trying to find unifying common denominator for all these things.
I think
all these people are sort of separating themselves from the seaboard.
They're separating themselves from the seaboard.
Even if you make it.
What?
Nether?
Yeah, because Nether just sort of like
make
yourself
different
by saying,
I
make a Nether that.
And if you're not only between Rapha, then you are.
Same thing.
You're making yourself too special.
I think this is like falsifiable, but it's like you can probably come up with a bunch of things that are unifying theories here.
And the question is, do you want them?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. So that's right. That is a bias, which you're welcome to have. Right? You like grand unified theories.
I
like this. All right. So that's you're welcome to sustain them, and you'll see whether you convince your fellow fellows. You'll see if you'll try it out. You'll see if they buy them or not. Some people like grand unified theories, and some people don't. Some people think it's good enough if a theory explains six cases, and we can just say 6 out of 8 is good enough.
No, the question is, what makes someone a Russian? So clearly, you broke down these cases in the sheets for a reason.
Yeah, because they're the best data you have. I don't have a theory. Again, my whole goal is just to get you to develop a theory. I don't have one of that, and I would try not to tell it to you. But I don't. I really don't. I have broad directions. Okay. So now we have we're going to the Gaonim. Okay, so you should have read the Tshuva of Star Shalom Gaon, which is hard to figure out. Actually, I'm glad you read it, but I'm going to skip it for the moment. And I want to read the Tshuva Sagaonim Gaonim Kadmonim Sinim Kuf Lamed Vav. Ani mahapik picharara. Va acher v'nidla himenu nikra rasha. V'ach al pi shenikra rasha. Ein bo koach l'beit din l'otzia miyado.
It makes it seem like that being Nicaragua is not usher, because if it's usher, then they shouldn't be part of the ability to.
No, legal category.
Well,
but why does he feel compelled to say that?
No,
one might think that it would be a legal category, right?
Yeah, so first of all, he has the Havamina, right? Obviously, or he at least has the Havamina that means that. And then, there are things that are usher that are not, right, that are not justiciable, right, not returnable, right? The Rivis Darabanan, the classic case. Right, it was usher to charge it was usher to pay it, but it doesn't return. And we have all kinds of lundus about that, because it means it's a non-monetary product. Right? It means that there is an isser, but the isser is not related to the finances or other kinds of lundus we can engage in to explain exactly what Darabanan is opposed to, derisive, and what kind of Darabanan. Ani Lamed Chorar leads to being called a Rasha, but it does not. But that fact does not empower Beit Din to reverse it. We're not going to say anything more than that yet. The apple piece in Hagba, in Hagramain, and even though you behaved in Hagramain, so now the question here is, so right now we go into a description. So is this description that follows an explanation of the Ani Mahapech Bakarara case, an extension of the Ani Mahapech Bakarara case, or a totally different case that happens to follow, right, that happens to have a similar principle? We don't know because we don't know how the Tshuva Sagaonim works. We don't know what this was. We don't know what the organizing principle of it is. So,
what?
We have a possibility, right? We say, Avavosh and Hagam in Arayin, for that matter, what's the other possibility which you should be telling me now? I warned you about this. The most likely possibility is that I misformatted.
Yeah.
And actually, the sentence ends after Vachopish and Hagam in Hagramain. Right, and that's the first case really ends. And then we get to a new case.
What?
Yeah.
Why can't
you have
a case where
you
get to a new case?
No, it does.
Yeah, but why would the Afalpi be at the beginning of the case? Makes no sense.
Okay, so I'll leave that to you, right? That's to which it is. Right. What he does is he connects. He has Ani Rabeich Bacharara, and then he has a case of Misha Asek im Chaver Liknot Menuchetes, Uvo Acher Vikana Utohachetes. So now he doesn't have raising the price, it's actual purchasing.
Which could be Ani
Rabeich Bacharara. Which could be Ani Rabeich Bacharara. Could be an extension of it. Right? He's dealing with Metaltalan as opposed to land, so it's not any of the cases that are explicitly in the Gemara.
But Chavela is a Metaltalan.
Yes. Right? So it could be an extension of it. But here it says imi da'ato, right? But here he has a more complicated halacha than the first case. It says it depends on whether mi da'ato shel mocher l'kach or not mi da'ato shel mocher. So the question is, what sort of whatever we're talking about a case? We made the purchase. without the dot, right? Without the dot of the mocher, you need to purchase without the dot of the mocher, knowing that someone else wanted to buy it, but it was misaseh. Very, very hard to figure out what these cases are. Very, very hard to figure out what these cases are. Okay. Now we have, pardon?
What purpose does Afo-P serve?
Which Afo-P?
The first one.
So, in the first one says...
I'm saying, it's not above the Negramayas.
Yeah. Right, so that, it would just be, he's called a Russia, he still can't do it, and even though, not only is he a Russia, but he also engaged in practices that in practices that are bad for the market.
So we're punishing him for like getting involved in the free market?
We're not punishing him.
I'm saying, but like we're pointing out that it's bad, that you're not allowed to be, you're not allowed to get
involved. So anyway, what's wrong with these cases,
yeah,
right? Right, what's wrong? Somebody's buying something and I walk in and I buy it instead. What's wrong with it? Right, so the problem, right, so what we do is we take out the ani, right? That's really what we've done is we've taken out the ani. And the issue is ani, so right, that's in case we go back to the condition, which says ani bahate tacharara, but ani bahate tacharara turned out to be, you know, for all we know, a very rich heir making his first real estate purchase. So the question is, right, what parts of ani, is ani bahate tacharara just a useful metaphor, but the ani, right, but that really has no, right, what we're doing is we're turning anyone into an ani. Right, we want you to perceive Uriah Hachiti as a desperately poor person with one sheep, even though he's a successful military officer. Or is it that it really only applies if you're if the person is really poor?
Well, if there's only one of a product, everyone's an ani in regards to it.
We'll get there. But it doesn't say you're anything.
Like,
there's only one.
Some people have more means of acquiring that one thing.
No, I mean, this one piece of land, if someone else owns it, I can't own it.
So land is possibly unique. On the other hand, it depends. You know, agricultural land is not terribly unique.
I mean, this piece of, who knows why I want this piece of land?
That's right, we don't know. That's our problem, right? Does it matter or not, whether it's unique, right? Or, you know, whether I'm trying, you know, we're competing over the one of 5 billion, you know, plastic things?
Like,
or
if you were negotiating for a specific thing, some people would be more able to start and win a ruinous bidding war with you.
Okay.
Regardless of the... So you would be an Ani Tacharara regardless of how much financial means...
Maybe, I don't know. You know, an evil person can just walk into the market and every time they see something trying to buy... You know, if you just want... You know, today I will get my $100 worth. So every time you see something about trying to buy something for $50, you say, I'll give $60. Right, and you're just your job is just to raise. You could hire somebody, right? The way you do.
You'll
right?
boost aggregate demand.
Gambling, right? Gambling towns, right?
You'll
right there, just keep
hero.
Boosting the pot.
You'll be an economic hero.
Yes. Yes, Frank.
Yeah, maybe I'm missing something here, but the case of the person who's not an ani is not described as a Russia.
Well, he said up to right. We say what happens, right? Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha asks him. Right. What happens in this case? He says, Nicar Russia. He says, so why did you do it? So that seems to suggest that you are the Russia.
But, I mean, the Chuvasik Ainim...
Yeah, Chuvasik Ainim doesn't... says, Ani Lachim Bacharara is called the Russia.
But then the second case is just Negar Mayim.
If that.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's the same.
It depends on the Negar Mayim is the end of the previous sentence or the beginning of that sentence. So we don't know, right? We don't know. So the answer is, the Ainim really don't give us much hope at this point, is the honest truth. Right, maybe at the end we'll go back and understand something. We'll read some Rishonim and we'll see they're coming from there. Maybe it'll help. But to figure out what the Rishonim, you know, and I'm okay. I don't know if any of you are. I'm okay thinking that most primary sources are incomprehensible in their own terms. That's what Masoret is helpful for. So I'm okay just establishing at the outset that we don't really know what any primary sources are, and then we can try and build them backwards from Masoret. Yes, sir.
It seems that this second case imitates from Masoret.
Yeah.
Seems to imply that when the supplier actually gets a profit, and that's the reason he takes the higher price, then we don't take it. We don't like force it to go back to the person offering the lower price because that isn't like this is free market.
That's a very reasonable interpretation.
Yeah.
And do we blame the higher purchaser or not?
It doesn't matter. But we don't force him to. We don't pay. We don't. There's no damages.
And it doesn't. So the only the Hapek Becharora case must be where whoever had the Becharora doesn't gain anything.
I mean, that's what Rashi thinks Mahapi Bakara means, right?
Well,
this
we'll see.
About profit.
Let's see.
Or in the,
it's very reasonable. Yeah. I think it's very reasonable. Okay, so now we have a set of cases, and for now we can take a look at what does Yorim de Molo Chayav mean. So in the first case, Rashi defines Yorim de Molo Chayav as the whole Devar Sheyachol. So you haven't met Yorim de Molo Chayav yet, right? So the background is you have to know, right, that there's a Gemara in which we say that if somebody calls somebody else a Rasha, right, that's what the children come in, then you have the right to be Yorim de Molo Chayav. So Yorim de Molo Chayav is the reaction to somebody calling you a Rasha. Now, around that term, you're reading all the right, which is very tempting to say must be midah k'neged midah. So that's what you can do to somebody who calls you a Rasha. That must be what we can do to somebody who is called a Rasha. Right, that's a plausible connection.
Can you repeat that?
If what I can do to somebody who calls me a Rasha is I can be a Reni Molochayav, why is that? Probably because, right, that's what, right, because I can do to him what he wanted to do to me.
Why? I'm saying it's not.
It's not obvious. It
doesn't follow the other two things in Kedushin. I call someone an Eved. What's Shayach Nino calling someone an Eved? I call someone a Mamzer. Malchus, why? Because there's an Isser Malchus on living with a Mamzer. I'm saying what's the.
Okay, good point. The parallelism doesn't work so well. Good point.
Also with Yorid is weird. So, I mean.
Yeah, and you're already hearing Yorid Lum Nasso.
Yeah.
Yes, and it may very well be they're connected.
So, I mean, it also might put a hole in the Midah, like in Midah theory.
Might? Okay, let's go. So, I want to go through what this could mean. So, Rashi, we just go to the Rashi. So, Rashi says, Yorid Mel Chayav in case one means, the whole Davar Shiyokol Hakinto Lahasidil Yorid. You can do whatever the heck you want. Anything that gets him mad or makes him lose stuff, right? Yorid Mel Chayav means, really, you already know Ad Chayav. If you do it right, you can be, right? This is what Torah says to you is you can be Satan towards you. Right? You can take away anything you want.
Who said this?
What's right? God says to Satan, right?
No, but who says that?
Rashi and Yuma, right? I'm just going to the Rashi.
Right?
Rashi Tubot says, you already know Ad Chayav, you're a doto virtua over closer lechem. You can discipline him with a strap and by starving him.
You're talking about your kid.
Yes. Okay.
Are those examples or?
I don't know. I'm just reading the Rashi. And Rashi, in our primary case, Yushin Tas Tuchet, when somebody called his chaver or Rasha, I'll teach you that chaver is not a term of friendship. You already know the chayav. Rashi says, Kilomar, Lazu ein beitin niskakim, abahu mutter lisanoto, you can hate him. Even though there is no baked-in reaction, as opposed to calling somebody Eved Nidui, which has a formal court reaction, so Yorim Olachayav, Rashi says, is a freedom of vigilante, right, creates a freedom of vigilante justice, but no court response. That's what it stands for.
Is that worse or better?
I don't know. And it means you can hate him, and you can do anything you want to be Ma'et Parnasato, and to be Ored L'Tofu Mato. So here we have him connected explicitly. Rashi Bava Metzia says that Yorim Olachayav Ragil his kotet imo ki'ilu hikavu u'ki'ilu bala hargo. You can treat him as a rodent, which is about the ultimate case of some place where you can, right, so right now you can almost willing to say you can kill him, although the courts will do nothing.
The hit kotet doesn't have an implication of physical violence.
And it's ki'ilu.
Yeah.
It's not.
But Ki'ilu Balahargos, we all know right now that the rhetoric of using saying somebody is like a Rudy is a very dangerous thing.
First of all,
there's an interesting din in Rodef where if you're able to stop a Rodef by something short of killing them,
yes, you have to use the minimal means necessary.
Yeah.
So maybe that applies here too.
Maybe that's what's going on.
Maybe. Rashi says the first interpretation is you can treat him almost as if he came to kill you. The second interpretation is you are Rashai le Reid le Tokum Matosh Shul Chavero u Lema'et Mezonotav Shul Chavero. So that's all the terms we have. We had Lema'et Parnasato, now it's Lema'et Mezonotav. And then Rashi says this fascinating thing. He says, the Kashhir, all of a sudden Rashi says, the Kashab Einai, Sheyatiru Chachamim LeYisrael Inakem LeGmol Ra'ah. How can we possibly allow this? We've been going around allowing this everywhere else, it seems all of a sudden Rashi has this one dude and no! It's bad! We shouldn't let people do that. To which he says, ah, so it must, right? And furthermore, he says, right, he says, how can you, when we said you do that to your son refuses to learn. Alright, so how can you be your rate with Toku Mato of your son? The whole point is you don't, right? Your son, Rafana Litman, wants to go to school and get a job and things like that. And you wanted to stay in Kobo. So what's your reason to Toku Mato, right? That's exactly what you wanted to do. You wanted to have an Inlander, but he doesn't have it yet. Okay. Very odd that Rashi asked the question in this one place. So, if you call somebody a Rasha, you can either be a Reza Toko Mato, or you can react with disciplinary violence, or you can treat him as a Rodesh. But Beit Din will not get involved. So it's in this space, this interesting space. Right? What is the space where we say it's really wrong, and we unleash you to treat the right? We deprive them essentially of the privileges of citizenship. And yet the courts won't get involved. Okay, yes. Avi Eli Chaim.
Later, what comes out in the movie of Rabbi Menachem Zerka?
Yeah.
Is that it's like Lonika Achicha, which is also kind of like Rashal's, who says, Rasha is Lonika Achicha. I couldn't find it anywhere earlier. But it makes a lot of sense. It's once you, like, the Engitz the King of Beit Din, or Engitz the King of Beit Din Alav, is as if he's not a Jew anymore. We don't have any.
You think that it's so much worse. Harem, we just treat you as a really bad Jew. But
harem,
here,
it's like we push you out until you're, I think you're like in one of the Tshuva of the Gaonim, we push you out until you're ready to come back and get your Malkot. But a Rasha, you're ready Melech Hayav, we don't care about you anymore,
this is much worse.
You're Din L'Toch Matcha, and the way we can understand it is Al-Fi Rashal, which is that you're not one of us anymore.
We take away your citizenship completely.
Yes.
And that's worse than anything else.
Absolutely, definitely.
Right. We treat you as beneath our judicial notice.
Yes.
That's an actual Russia, right? That a society can do that too.
But that sounds like what we're doing.
No, that's what an individual can do to someone who calls him a Russia.
Right. Which why
also
is that so horrible? Like what is so incredibly right? Like you're a Russia. What does that mean to saying that? Right?
I don't know.
All right.
Yeah.
So. I mean, for some reason in my mind, I may be totally off here. Here, sounds very much. Like Kamalian Pagamai, where
like
Vesna, it says a lot like Kamalian Pagamai, where Vesna won't get involved, but you're allowed to kill him if you want to.
So here we will go back to Karmapa's category of actually Asur. But I want to take Chaim's comment, then we'll wrap up. Okay, so here's what I want to say as a wrap up, and this is and then we'll finish. We will plan on finishing this packet tomorrow, and I'll have the report the next unit out already. Which we will commence, I guess, probably on Monday. We'll do something else in Shira on Friday. So part of the challenge here is exactly the category of actually Asur. So we have a sort of notion that the way in which that there are sort of the real laws, and real halachot are things that Beis Din responds to, and then there are the fuzzy moral things. And the moral things are things that we think, which we tend to think must be less, much less important. Right? And this is a way of thinking about halakhic economics. All the stuff we really care about, that we make law. And it, right, we make it really cool, right, we make it really absurd, meaning there's a law that says, it's framed as you cannot do this. And everything else is just rhetoric. What I'm trying to get at is that it doesn't all seem to be the categories of law and not law are clear here. Because it's right. Because it's a very real consequence to say that, or it's obvious, right? We deprive you of citizenship. That's a really serious consequence. We're letting people in all these things. We're letting people do things to you. So if we say we can be yored l'toch hayav means you can be yored l'toch u'mato. And remember, we began by saying that to be yored l'toch u'mato is committing adultery. Right? It's one of the things that if you're yored l'toch u'mato somebody else, you don't deserve to live.
We never supposed to be though.
Pardon?
We never said it was
Asur. But we never said it was Asur. So it could be the right. So now we can have these like two different worlds. There's the world of real law, which has Beit Din punish, and there's the world of real wrong, which lets other people do very, very real things to you. But what I want to get is that the world outside of quote unquote formal Isurim is not a world of language. It's a world that has consequences every bit as real as the world of quote-unquote law. And I don't know if people had to choose which of these punishments would you have. Would you rather be forced to give it back? Or would you rather have people be entitled to steal it, to steal everything you own? Like, which of these is a worse punishment? Undoing the Mecca? Right? Or removing your or removing all your social privileges? So I don't think that that our instinctive notion that hierarchy is established by the extent of formal response is correct. Now if I'm right that hierarchy is not connected to the degree of formal response, there's another way of thinking about it is that maybe these quote-unquote informal responses are actually part of an overall legal framework. It's not that we're talking about how bad we think something is. We're trying to figure out how we create the most effective economic system, and sometimes the most effective way of responding to things is by having the courts respond to them, and sometimes the most effective way of responding to things is by having the community respond to them, and sometimes the most effective way of responding to things is by allowing people to respond to it, to respond to it directly. And we're not talking about seriousness at all. Right? We're dealing pragmatically. What is the best way of discouraging this behavior without having pernicious responses? So that's the what I want to get out of this, right? Ellie's right, I do this in the court for a purpose. What I wanted to raise at the very outset, is really to challenge this notion that formally designed Isurim are actually what is core to the goals of the halakhic system. And that you can recognize formally designed Isurim by court-imposed consequences. And maybe both of those are false. Maybe the reduction of certain things to formal rules is not a statement of significance at all. Maybe there are times when you have to, there really is a very, very formal rule, and nonetheless, we decide that the best way of enforcing that rule is by putting you at the mercy of your competitor, as opposed to by interfering regulatively. Right, we can respond by simply, let's say we can have a straightforward way of framing is that the default setting is that we protect you from competition. And a great disincentive to misbehavior is if you misbehave, we will cease protecting you from competition. That's all. Right? That's not right. We don't have to do anything to you. Right? The next thing I want to point out, which is what I said to Yesh earlier, which is the notion of what is a formal law and what is not may be fluid, because it might be that in some places and in some time a particular principle is treated as moral rhetoric, and in a different place, at a different time, it is treated as law, and that can be progressive over time, or it can go back and forth. And it can be that this is an example where each pasek in their own time and place looks at it and says, well, you know what? This is not going to work if we leave it vague, so we need to formulate it. Another posek says, but in my culture, no, that's not right. That's not a viable thing at all. So I'll give you one thing, for example. In our culture, saying that the reaction to what's up to a wrong is to go to Beit Din is to make it unenforceable. Because Beit Din has no power in our culture. So saying that the only redress you have for a wrong is the courts, in our culture, is to make it practically unenforceable. Whereas to say there are social consequences, right, that's important, right? That's big and real. But in another culture, it might be the social that it might be that the Batidin are authorized by the state courts, but they have no social respectability. So, right, saying, for example, that for somebody in the Haredi community in Israel nowadays, you know, the right to sue them in the Rabbanut, right? So that has practical consequences, but the state has no social pull at all. So it might be that in different contexts, right, people will make different decisions, because, right, and that different, right, that different
opposite consequences in different cultures can reflect the same hierarchy. And so when you look at a tshuva, you have to be careful about building consistent policy. Well, he says this, he says this. But maybe they're saying the same thing, but it has different expressions, because in their society, right, access to court, right, sending someone to court and not sending someone to court has very different, right, have very different valences. And I say, in reality, right, in our system, where Bet HaDin are extremely unpowerful. So that, right, so you really have to be careful. Right, that's why, let's say, in Gittin, right, so we construct modes of social power that are much more effective than the Beit Din, all right, than formal Beit Din solution. Okay, last comment.
So just to do something you said about our default system is that we can protect you from competition,
yeah,
and possibly undoing that would have huge consequences. I'm not sure if we've ever seen this default system is that we can actually protect you.
No, we haven't seen it at all yet. I just said that. We have not.
Again, Yoreid Lomanu Chavero is a bad thing. We actually haven't seen that it's something we can enforce.
We haven't seen it. We haven't seen any Beit Din consequences at all. And if all we've seen is that, we saw at the beginning that people said that the consequence of your doing this is that now we will tell people it is not absurd. Yes, yes.
Just to add on to the Rashi stuff. Rashi reads back in Kiddushin that a Nikra Rasha is someone, a Rasha is, or someone who's Nikra Rasha is Shayor L'chai Chavero. So, meaning, if you want to read that Vida Kanga Vida sort of thing, then this Rasha would seem to support that. And
sure.
The Rasha is Yor Chavero, L'chai Chavero, you can do the same thing.
Yes, no, I think that's the way it will tie together in the end, is exactly that, is that the reason Ani Mahapek the Harara is called, it's called the Russia, is because Yoreid L'Tochum Not Shel Chavero is the same as Yoreid L'Chayav. And the response to somebody calling you Rasha is you can Yoreid L'Chayav, now we've built the whole circle together, right, and we tied it out. The counter to that is, right, as Yesh said, that there doesn't seem the same Midak Neged Midah by calling Nevid and calling Mamzer. And you have to figure out which of those pressures drives you more. I confess that I like the Midah Keneged Midah aspect of it, but I can't tell you it's demonstrable. Yes, ma'am.
Without prejudice to the point that you made at the end, if Bezin has the power to tell you to return the object and you don't return it, so what would the consequences of that be?
Depends on, you quit, I guess, In theory, basically, whoever they want to.
And they can remove your protection, okay?
They could do that then, yes.
So versus if we say that it's not enforceable and Bezin can't force you to return it, then the default is that that they remove your protection, whereas you also have the option of going and returning it, and
right. So I understand that you're saying that.
So actually, the case where we don't enforce it is more count than the case where we don't enforce it.
So there's a more complicated answer, but let's say on the first level, in order to for Beit Din to force the other guy to return it, he has to come to Beit Din. He has to win in Beit Din. The question is, do you need a formal psak to decide that somebody's Nikra Rasha, or is that a decision you can decide for yourself? So there's much less expense involved in it. It's not subject to kimlet. And if you come to Beit Din, if he has any plausible defense of his actions, Beit Din is paralyzed, now you can't do anything. But if he's Nikra Rasha, if the threshold of proof is just it has to be plausible to you, such that when he comes to counter theory, there's lots more freedom, there's lots more practical things. And then in practice, so it's true, Beit Din can do all those things, but in reality, Beit Din can't afford to go to the line against every avariyah. Right? It's a waste of resources. So, and it won't be your discretion. Right? It'll be Bezin's discretion is how important it is, and Beit Din may have other fish to fry and not be willing to go to the mat because he's refusing to return your $10 bill. That's in pride, right? Yes, in theory, anytime you go to Beit Din, Beit Din raises anything whoever it wants to enforce it. But I don't. But in practice, forcing someone to go to Beit Din restrains direction greatly, and increases the chances that they won't win.
And if they, in the meantime, go and do whatever as if they had already gotten them sacked and it was a rush on, they can defend that action afterwards.
I think that if it's returnable in court and you could sue, then you're not allowed to engage in, right, to do all these other things to compel it. So you have another, right, you have other remedy. And that would be my presumption. That, right, that when you have a remedy in Beit Din, that is the remedy you have to exercise. Whether you could say, oh, even if you know enough shame, you could grab it and force them to counter sue you, that's a different issue. But you certainly could not say, well, I want you to give the $10 back, so I'm gonna, right, so I'm gonna go give out candies at half price outside your candy store until you give it back. But why are you doing that? Why aren't you just playing late? All right. Yeah, that's the answer, Jeff. I think we're ready. Okay. And let's plan tomorrow. Assuming that we're going to.